Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Thursday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Got Patrick Lilia joining me today. Patrick, how are things going with you?
Yeah, it's been a very busy day here at the station so far.
Indeed, yeah. Pre-recording lots of our weekend programming, including Connections Radio. We also had Food Freedom Radio getting recorded, so lots of programs to look forward to this weekend on AM 950. Even if you only listen to us on the weekdays, I encourage you to check out some of the great shows we have on the weekend here on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing good over here, too. Yeah, it's been busy for me as well in production, getting some commercials set and following along what's happening in the news today. I've been trying to figure out what's going to happen in the state Senate with this bonding bill. My guess would be, at least following some of the Capitol reporters that I'm in contact with, is that it probably will pass. It looks like, at least in the state Senate, the Republicans are pretty much split 50-50 in terms of whether this bill is going to pass or not. Which is probably good news if you are someone who wants to see the bill passed, since most, if not all, Democrats are going to be a yes. For example, we have Jim Abler, Republican from Anoka. He says the bill is a success story. He plans on voting yes. The Senate Tax Chair, Roger Chamberlain, well, he's a no on the bill, as is a State Senator, Michelle Benson. But we do have another yes that it looks like coming through on the bill. They're giving speeches right now as we speak, as John Jasinski, Republican from Faribault, sounds like he'll be a yes. So even if you just get 50% of the Republicans on board with this thing, along with all of the Democrats, that should get to the overall 60% supermajority needed to pass that bonding bill, which is desperately needed in the state, especially with the COVID-induced recession. There are lots of jobs that we certainly need to create and projects all across the state of Minnesota, whether we're talking about building new water plants, new roads and bridges, those will all come from this bonding bill. And my guess would be it will probably pass unless we see some sort of surprise in the state Senate. We'll have a lot more on this coming up towards the bottom of the hour, as we'll be joined by House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler. He is the DFL representative from District 46A, which includes Golden Valley, Plymouth, and St. Louis Park, as he'll be able to give us more details on where the bonding bill stands right now, what went into the sausage making of the bonding bill. I always find that really fascinating when you need bills that need a supermajority, because you obviously need support from the other side. So there is lots of compromise in these bills, and we'll chat with Ryan Winkler coming up, as he is the number two ranking Democrat in the state House. That'll be at about 2:30 or so. But I do want to start off with a little national news, because Patrick, I did a little of my own investigative reporting last night. Well, sort of investigative reporting. This was like Photoshop slash graphic design 101. And I think I can definitively say that this so-called bombshell that was released by the New York Post yesterday, saying that they had proof, smoking gun evidence, that Vice President, then Vice President Joe Biden was directly involved with Burisma. Well, it turns out, at least according to my little investigative work, that there's like a 99.9% chance that these emails were forged. And it goes to the background I have, my very novice background in graphic design and Photoshop. I'll get to that in just a minute, but let's at least start with the absurdity of the story on its face. So, the allegations go that back in April of 2019, Hunter Biden, of course the son of Joe Biden, brought in a laptop computer to a computer repair shop in Delaware. He did this back in April of 2019. And the allegations follow that, well, Hunter Biden never came back to pick up that laptop and didn't pay for the repairs that were made. So, Patrick, I don't know about you, but let's say you run a computer repair shop. Someone brings in a computer for you to repair. You do all of the repairs necessary. And then the customer never shows up and never pays you. What would be your first action after that? What are you thinking? Would you call the customer? That would at least be my first action,
saying,
hey, come pick up the computer. Your bill is overdue. Come on in and pay it. I'm guessing, though, your first action would not be, once you have a non-paying customer, to call Rudy Giuliani, I take it that wouldn't be your first plan of action when you have a customer who's not paying.
Also, my first plan of action would not be, hey, let's find out what's on the laptop.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, you would not be finding out what's on the laptop. You would not be calling Rudy Giuliani. You would not immediately be going and calling the FBI. By the way, the owner of this computer shop has been giving conflicting reports as to what he did with the laptop, which certainly raises some red flags. At least as he was interviewed by other media outlets yesterday, they were saying he was appearing very flustered and changing his story and appearing very fearful. Certainly the mark of someone who's lying. So, yeah, there's the first absurdity right there. If you bring in a laptop to a repair shop and don't pick it up, yeah, if you're the shop owner, your first call is not going to be to the FBI or Rudy Giuliani. You're probably going to call the customer and say, hey, I don't know if you forgot, but you got a laptop at my shop. You need to come pick it up and, of course, pay for the repairs that I made. So that's the first thing that appears kind of stupid on the face. Now, when they went through and looked at the contents of the laptop, there was an alleged email that Hunter Biden sent to the one of the workers with the Burisma company. And Hunter was saying, well, I'm going to set up a meeting with my dad, Vice President Joe Biden. And the allegations go, well, because Joe Biden had this meeting with this person affiliated with Burisma that led to Joe Biden trying to fire a prosecutor in the Ukraine who was going to investigate Burisma. Now, if you actually look further into it, it's actually quite the opposite. Joe Biden wanted this prosecutor in Ukraine fired because he wasn't investigating Burisma. In fact, pretty much every other nation in the so-called Western world was on board with the Obama-Biden administration at that point. They wanted the prosecutor fired because he wasn't investigating customers like Burisma. So that's problem number two with this. But now, let's go to the pretty definitive proof that I think I have that these emails were forged. So if you look at the PDF of this so-called correspondence between Burisma and Hunter Biden, look in the top right corner and you'll see the little Gmail icon that says VP. I think it's the initials of this Ukrainian guy that Hunter Biden was supposedly emailing. Now, here's what I find interesting about this. Take a close look at this. You'll notice the image in that top right corner appears to be really blurry compared to the rest of the PDF file and to the rest of the text. That typically is the sign that it was Photoshopped, because if you take a screen cap of something that's done in Gmail or Outlook or whatever your email provider is, if you screen cap something, everything should be in the same resolution. You shouldn't have one part of the screen appear to be more blurry than another. In fact, I've done some experience with Photoshop in the past, and graphic design being that with my own streaming business, I oftentimes make little on-screen graphics for like a score bug or a scoreboard when I'm out streaming sports, and oftentimes I need to Photoshop and pull up team logos and so on and so on. And usually when you're like pulling images from the internet and not spending a whole lot of time, you'll get images that are at a different resolution. So this appears to be exactly what happened in this case with this supposed email between Burisma and Hunter Biden. In fact, if you even look at that PDF document and zoom in even more, if you continually zoom in, you'll notice the text stays in the same resolution where it appears to be nice and clear, while that Gmail logo in the top right corner of the screen continues to get more and more blurry. Now, you can even conduct your own experiment. Let's say you have a Gmail account. Log into it, send an email, and take a screen cap of the email. If you were to zoom in on what you took a picture of or took your screen capture of, that logo in the top right corner, your little Gmail initial logo, that shouldn't get blurry. The resolution shouldn't change. So I think we have some pretty clear evidence that this entire thing was absolutely Photoshopped. So, funny story about this too. In fact, I kind of did a similar thing when I tried forging an email to my dad a few years ago. I have a little running joke that I do with my dad around holiday time where we both send each other fake greeting cards. We oftentimes poke fun at each other because we like making fun of Minnesota sports teams because they often don't win. So I ended up sending a fake greeting card to my dad a number of years ago for his birthday. Because at that point, he was like butt-dialing members of our family continually. So What I did, I created a fake letter from AT&T giving him these fake overage charges and saying he was being investigated by AT&T's internal affairs or whatever else. So, of course, to make this letter look kind of legitimate, I engaged in a lot of Photoshop where I was trying to get a logo from AT&T to put in the corner of the screen. I even tried to like forge a fake signature of one of the vice presidents of AT&T, and I ended up sending it to my dad. I didn't spend a whole lot of time on it. At least from a distance, it looked like a pretty real letter, but if you were to go in and zoom in and actually look at it, you could tell I Photoshopped it since we had images that were at different resolutions than the rest of the text. Well, this is exactly what appears to happen with this Hunter Biden email. Not only does it appear to be Photoshopped, but they didn't even do a very good job at this. So if you don't believe me, go ahead and run your own test. Go to your Gmail account, send an email, compose an email, and take a screenshot of it, just like they did with the so-called Hunter Biden email. When you zoom in on that screen cap, that logo on Gmail in the top right corner of your screen, that resolution shouldn't change. That should appear crystal clear, just like the text on your screen, even if you continually zoom in. So don't take my word for it. Go ahead and test that with your own Gmail account. In fact, it works with any email provider. I tested it with Outlook and Yahoo Mail as well. So I was tipped off on this from an article in the Medium where there were a couple of authors, Brian and Eddie Krasterstein, who conducted the same sort of test. And I decided to do it myself. And knowing with my sort of background I have in graphic design and Photoshop, pretty much 99% confident that these emails, these smoking gun emails between Hunter Biden and Burisma, were absolutely forged. Completely fake. I'm not the biggest fan of Joe Biden. He wasn't my first choice to be the Democratic nominee for president, but come on, in this case, yeah, it's pretty much certain that these emails, this smoking gun email, was absolutely forged and is totally fake. Let's go to Gary in Minneapolis, who's been waiting for a few minutes on the phone lines. Hey, Gary, how you doing today?
Good. Brett, Biden, you know, he was there with the credit card companies, but that's nothing, though. He got a black woman on his resume. He opened up to us liberals more, too, now he's running for president, so I got to support him. Look what he got, the alternative. He's dangerous to not just a democracy, but our very life, that damn Trump. But I was going to say, when I called about that stuff you're talking about, Republicans always run dirt. They can't win on the issues. What have they ever done for us? I mean, back in Ike's days, he did a little, I guess, but they killed the unions in 47 over Truman's veto, the power of them, you know, the Taft-Hartley. And then Ike had Nixon do his dirty work, commie hunting, and the other guy, McCarthy. McCarthy wouldn't call a fellow Catholic a communist, so Nixon would do it. In fact, Nixon won his House seat and his Senate seat but with that red paintbrush. And then they had John Foster Dulles, who owned American Fruit down in Central America, you know. That's why they wiped the farmers out of there, so they can take control of all the Banana Republic money. So mm-hmm. I go on and on. You know, they threw dirt at Humphrey about womanizing or a prostitute. They're not into it. And they threw dirt at Muskie 4 years later that he was running something about his wife or some made-up scandal. So that's the only way they can win. Do you agree? Throw dirt.
Yeah, it is a lot of dirt. And typically when you're behind and far behind in the polls like Donald Trump is right now, you do resort to some pretty desperate tactics, and appreciate the phone call, Gary. And that's exactly what we're seeing from this so-called smoking gun email. It's funny here. I just got a text from my dad saying, wait a second, that AT&T email you sent me a few years ago was fake? We always have fun with doing that around holiday time where we send each other fake greeting cards, whether it be that like fake phone bill I sent my dad, or he sent me pictures where I've been like Photoshopped on heads of different Minnesota coaches. We have some fun with that. But the point is, if you do a low quality job with Photoshop and don't spend a lot of time, it's pretty easy to tell that something was edited in a program like Photoshop, because typically you'll see images that are at different resolutions, or in other words, when you zoom in on a screen capture, a picture, and you have multiple things that are Photoshopped, you'll see different aspects of that picture that appear to be blurry and other aspects that appear to be crystal clear. That's usually the mark that an image was Photoshopped, and this clearly, to me, seems to be the case with these so-called smoking gun emails with Hunter Biden. Let's take a break and come on back, because I want to talk about some under-the-radar races that I'm going to be watching this fall. going to be looking just beyond the presidential election and even the congressional elections. I think there are some really important state legislative races, not just in Minnesota, but around the country that we should really pay attention to. We'll talk about that coming up next here on FYI Politics.
The Blaisdell in Minneapolis has two great options for weddings. The Blaisdell Parlor provides an intimate ceremony space with beautiful greenery surrounding the fireplace. Or for those preferring an outdoor ceremony, the Blaisdell Courtyard, offering a breathtaking space to say I do, surrounded by loved ones and a stunning landscape. If you or a family member was planning on postponing a wedding due to COVID-19, well, this is your chance to make the marriage official while still planning for a reception at a later date. More information and available dates at theblaisdell.com.
Hazel's Northeast is back and offering some of the most creatively prepared comfort food you'll find. Delicious breakfast options include the slow-cooked brisket hash, chicken fried steak, and the famed drunken banana French toast. Or for lunch and dinner, there's Swedish meatballs, wild rice gumbo, and more. Hazel's Northeast is open Wednesdays through Saturdays 8 to 8 and Sundays 9 to 2. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis. Make your reservation now at hazelsnetogo.com.
Joe Biden debates Donald Trump for the final time on Thursday, October 22nd, and we'd love to have you join us for our debate-watching party at Crooner's Supper Club. We'll be indoors this time at Crooner's newly remodeled Dunsmore Room. It features tall windows that emit fresh air, along with climate-controlled heating to make sure everyone stays safe and comfortable. And because of the indoor venue and safety precautions, tickets are limited and will go fast, so order them now at am950radio.com. Masks are required and tickets will only be sold in groups of 2 and 4. But if you'd like a single ticket, please call us at 952-946-8885. The debate starts at 8, but doors will open early, so come and enjoy a delicious dinner beforehand. Again, that's our presidential debate watch party on Thursday, October 22nd, in the Dunsmore Room at Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. Tickets will not be available at the door, so order them now at am950radio.com.
Hi, this is Laura. 2020 has been marked by a virus, growing evidence of the climate crisis, a political uprising, and many of us are feeling unsettled. Together, we get by with a little help from our friends. Together, we find the resilience to meet the moment. Regenerative economics holds great promise for improved systems. Instead of a dog-eat-dog world, let's create a trust economy, one that honors the earth and sees the limitless value of each individual. When we buy from each other, we know each other. Go to am950radio.com and see the wonderful independent businesses AM950 relies on to exist. These businesses are more than advertisers. They are our friends. We all get by with a little help from our friends. Help us build the AM950 business ecosystem. If you know of a company, service, or product that belongs in the AM950 community, let me know. Laura at am950radio.com, or you may also call the station 952-946-8885. AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. In about 10 minutes or so, we'll be joined by House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler as we'll be talking about the bonding bill, which passed the House yesterday and appears to be working its way through the Senate as we speak. I would put the odds as pretty strong that it will pass the Senate, being that there are at least a few Republicans who appear to be on board with it, but still remains to be seen. Very tough to predict when you have legislation that requires a supermajority of 60%. And that's the case in Minnesota when it comes to a bonding bill. Doesn't just take a simple majority to pass those bills. Takes that 60% supermajority. Now, speaking of the state legislature, of course, we do have a number of very competitive races in Minnesota that will determine whether Democrats or Republicans control the state Senate next year, which is very, very important because should Democrats and the DFL win the state Senate, that would mean Democrats control every lever of government in the state, which would give them not only a whole bunch of power over legislation, but more importantly, power over redistricting. But if we looked beyond Minnesota, there are a bunch of other states where Democrats have some real opportunities to either create their own trifectas or at least break up Republican trifectas, which again has a major impact on redistricting and gerrymandering, since Democrats really got burned by that in 2010 when Republicans had a big year in 2010, which allowed them to redraw the boundaries and pretty much gerrymander Democrats out of power all around the country. So these are some under-the-radar races that I'm going to be watching on election night as we go through our coverage. I'll still, of course, be covering what's happening here in Minnesota and in the U.S. Congress, as well as our own local state legislature. But I think there are some other races around the country that we need to pay attention to that will have massive impacts, not just in those individual states, but at the congressional level as well. So here are a few I'm really going to be watching on election night, and one of these caught me by surprise because I didn't know that this chamber was in play. But in the state of Texas, their state House of Representatives has a very good chance of going to the Democrats this year. In fact, right now, Republicans hold an 83-67 majority in their state House, which means Democrats would only need to pick up 9 seats to take the majority, which would be very, very significant because in 2010, Texas Republicans controlled the governor's mansion, the state house, and the state senate, and they, of course, gerrymandered the many congressional districts in the state of Texas, obviously one of the most populous states in the entire union. And if you have gerrymandering in Texas, that means, well, Republicans can hold more seats than they probably should, since you can pack all the Democrats, Democratic voters, that is, in one district. So if you can at least flip one of those chambers in Texas, and it looks like their state house is the best chance, that would have a massive impact on U.S. House elections, because all of a sudden you would now have Democrats getting a voice in Texas when it comes to redistricting, and that could lead to some actual fair districts in the state of Texas. So that's one state house to watch. Another one to watch is North Carolina. North Carolina, like Texas, is one of the most gerrymandered states around the entire country. Republicans, like in Texas in 2010, built up both majorities in their state legislature and had control of the governor's mansion. Now, already in North Carolina, they do have a Democratic governor, which means there's no chance of having a Republican trifecta, especially since this fall, the North Carolina governor, who's a Democrat running for re-election, is polling far ahead of his Republican challenger. But there's actually a fairly good chance that the Dems in North Carolina could flip both chambers of the state legislature. For instance, in the state house in North Carolina, the GOP only has a 65-55 edge, meaning the Dems would only need to flip 6 seats to take the majority. In the state senate, the GOP has a 29-21 edge, which means the Democrats need to flip only 5 seats. Just imagine that for a second if the Democrats are able to flip both of those chambers and hold the governor's mansion. You could have the exact opposite scenario of what we had in 2010, where all of a sudden it could be the Democrats in the position to gerrymander in that state. Another one to watch is the Ohio State Representative's House. Now, this is one to watch because even though Ohio, like the other states I mentioned, is very gerrymandered and Republicans have a pretty hefty majority at 61-38, there is at least a small chance that that chamber could flip. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that over in the state of Ohio, their former state speaker of the House, as well as several other Republican legislative members, were removed because of, well, a corruption and bribery scandal. And right now, the Republican Party of Ohio is extremely unpopular. So the Dems would need 12 seats to flip in the state of Ohio to get their chamber to at least get that under Democratic control. Probably not the most likely one to see flip, but just because of how toxic the Republican brand is in Ohio, there is a very good chance that could happen. Now, again, I'm mentioning these races, the North Carolina House and Senate, the Texas House, and the Ohio House, because if the Dems are able to flip these chambers, that means no more gerrymandering in North Carolina, Texas, or Ohio. That would mean potentially many more competitive seats than what we saw in the 2010s. Again, if you look at those states, even though like a state, North Carolina, should be about 50-50 split between Democrats and Republicans, the GOP controls just about all of the congressional seats in that state due to the fact that the Republicans were able to gerrymander back in 2010. So this has a far bigger impact beyond those states because it could also have a big impact on congressional elections during the decade of the 2020s because all of a sudden, if you have split control in those three states, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas, gerrymandering goes away. We don't have to worry about that going to the Supreme Court and trying to overturn gerrymandering, which is ultimately unlikely, being that they were probably going to have six conservative justices now. So you can skip the judicial system altogether if you're able to flip at least one of these chambers in each of these states, North Carolina, Texas, and Ohio. So those are some races I'm really going to be watching on election night. And as time goes on, I'm going to try to zoom in on a few of these specific legislative seats in each of these states because, like in Minnesota, there probably are a few of these seats that are good barometers that will tell us how the rest of the night will go in the entire state. So as the weeks go on and we get closer to the election, I'll be picking out like a few special races in North Carolina, Texas, and Ohio that should give us a good indication as to whether the Democrats are able to flip those chambers or if they'll stay under Republican control. Because it would be obviously tough to keep track of every single race in those states. But if I can just zoom in and maybe pick one or two races that give us a good indication, that could be kind of fun to follow along on election night, since typically on other media outlets, they're not going to be covering what's happening in state legislative chambers. So the ones I'm watching on election night, the Texas House, the Ohio House, and both the North Carolina House and North Carolina Senate. If those end up flipping, that could have a major impact on congressional elections during the decade of the 2020s. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break and come on back with House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler as we'll be talking about the bonding bill coming up next here on FYI Politics.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around, check us out online, and when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hi, everybody. This is Santita Jackson of AM 950's new daily morning drive show, The Santita Jackson Show. Minneapolis, St. Paul, I couldn't be more excited about starting our days together. Monday through Friday, 6 to 8 a.m. Central on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll bring you the best progressive talkers, thinkers, and doers. And there's one more seat at the table, and that belongs to you. Monday through Friday, 6 to 8 a.m. Central, morning drive on AM 950, Minnesota's Progressive Voice, The Santita Jackson Show.
Hi, this is Chad from AM 950. With the recent round of storms that came through the Twin Cities, some of you may have sustained damage to your roofing, siding, or windows. Call Snap Construction, the company we trust, to see if you sustained damage. Snap Construction is arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, and window company in the metro. Ryan, how are you able to help people that may have had damage from these storms?
Well, Chad, with experience, we've helped thousands of Minnesotans with their storm damage claims. If you suspect your home has damage or was denied in the past, give us a call for your free inspection. It can take up to a year for hail and wind damage to reveal itself. The insurance process can be complicated. We make it easy. We use the same costing software that all insurance companies rely on. As always, we stand behind our work with a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee. Don't wait. Call us for your free estimate or inspection today. 612-333-SNAP. 612-333-SNAP.
Food Freedom Radio is generously supported by Seward Co-op, now offering online ordering and pickup at both the Franklin and Friendship stores. Shop online at seward.coop/curbside and then pay over the phone. Just call when you arrive at the store for pickup. It's that easy and safe. Offering dedicated pickup times for our first responders, seniors, and those with compromised immune systems from 1 to 2 p.m. Start your shopping at seward.coop/curbside. Stay safe.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
Why must the world be so cold? They've gone against what was told. Thinking rape is cool? Think about it. They think it's not wrong. Violence against women, the rape, the abuse, the emotional, physical, they all hold the hate. Think about it. Is it right or wrong? What attracts you? I'm not saying no names, but you laugh. Talk about it like nothing is wrong. Think about it. They all hold the hate. Gotta stop the violence. Stop the hate. Think about it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So just to recap what I was talking about in that last segment, every 10 years, each state gets to redraw their legislative boundaries, not just for the state legislature, but also for the U.S. Congress within those states. And they have to be agreed upon by both chambers in the legislature and the governor. And obviously, if you have the governor's mansion and both chambers of the legislature controlled by the same party, you can engage in gerrymandering, which is exactly what we saw in states like Texas, Ohio, and North Carolina. 2020, obviously another census year. And if Democrats can break up trifectas in states like North Carolina, Texas, and Ohio, that has a major impact on what the U.S. House of Representatives can look like. And that's the reason why, at least on election night, I'm going to be following those legislative races closely in Texas, North Carolina, and Ohio. Let's switch gears now and talk about what's happening at the Minnesota State Legislature, as yesterday the State House of Representatives was able to pass a $1.3 billion bonding bill, which will have a big impact on the Minnesota economy in terms of creating jobs and getting some much-needed infrastructure projects completed. So joining us to talk about the bonding bill is State Representative Ryan Winkler from District 46A, which includes portions of Golden Valley, Plymouth, and St. Louis Park. Ryan is also the House Majority Leader for the DFL. Hey, Representative Winkler, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. So we finally got this bonding bill passed, which was kind of a surprise to me, given that for months and months it seemed like House Republicans were not going to be on board. And as we brought up earlier on the show, you do need a 60% supermajority to pass the bonding bill. So what changed over the past few days to get some of these Republicans on board with the bonding bill in the House?
Well, I think the biggest thing that happened over time is that a lot of Republicans in the House wanted their projects in their districts to be funded. They wanted to take care of their communities and help create jobs. And they realized that this bill was the way to do it and the only way. In the end, House leadership, Kurt Dowd, didn't agree, but 25 members of his caucus did agree with us. And so even though Republican leadership remained opposed to the bill, we got a lot of Republican votes, far more than we needed, and sent the bill over to the Senate, and they're about to vote on it.
Yeah, it looks like they're debating it right now, and I think there's a pretty good chance this passes, since as I've at least been following along on Twitter with some of the Capitol reporters that I follow on that platform, it looks like we have some Republicans on board, some that are against it, which is at least some good news, since I would assume most DFLers in the Senate would be on board, and at least if you can get a few Republicans to support it, seems like it would pass. What are your thoughts?
It's going to pass, without question. Mm-hmm. Senator Gazelka has been clear that the bill will pass. Anything that comes over from the House, essentially, they said would pass. They'll have all the Republican votes they need, plus I would imagine most, if not every, DFL vote. So the bill will pass, and we knew that last night when we passed it out of the House. That was the major accomplishment because the Senate really has been there for a long time.
So what parts of the bill have you most optimistic or most excited? Because it looks like there are some really good provisions in this bonding bill that was passed.
Yeah, you've mentioned $1.3 billion, and that's true for one part of the bill, but there's also $160 million in housing infrastructure bonds, which helps create affordable housing projects and create jobs. There are highway bonds, which helps create road construction projects around the state. And there was also a $200 million tax provision, which typically I wouldn't favor, but in this case, it's a temporary boost to businesses that are putting in capital equipment investments right now. So altogether, it's about a $2 billion package. And we also have a supplemental budget included in there that will help to save jobs in mental health and care for the disabled, help to make sure that state agencies are able to keep operating after civil unrest this summer. So there's just a wide range of very positive investments in Minnesota contained in the bill, and it should be a real help as we try to help our economy recover as we move through COVID-19.
Well, one of the provisions that I liked in the bonding bill was that we're finally getting a wage increase for PCAs. I have a number of friends who work as PCAs, and they are severely underpaid, both on the private and public sector side of this. So any increase we can give to them, especially during a pandemic, I think is very, very helpful because they do some great work and are significantly underpaid for the amount of things that they do for the elderly and disabled community in Minnesota.
Absolutely. That was one of the last-minute things we were able to get put into the bill last night as we were debating it. And it's not a permanent fix. We know that we have much more to do in that area, but it helps get a bump in pay and get us into next year when we will be starting over with a budget and needing to find new resources and make sure that we are taking care of not only the people in Minnesota who are taking care of us, but making sure that families all over the state have access to health care and quality education, paid leave, and the whole range of economic security and health security issues that we need to tackle.
So as you were saying, this is just unfortunately a one-time increase, it sounds like?
Yeah, it's temporary. Mm-hmm. But it's operating within the budget constraints that we have and knowing that we need to work with Republicans in order to get this done.
Yeah, and at least for 1 year, yeah, we'll get them paid a little bit more money, and hopefully, should we have a change in the composition of the legislature, we can get something done on a more permanent basis. Talking a little bit more about this bill right now, oftentimes when I hear people who aren't quite familiar with the bonding bill, they'll say, well, why are we borrowing money for all of these projects? Why not just take it out of the general fund? But these are a lot of large capital projects that we are engaging with on this bonding bill, and well, also a good time, I would assume, being that we have low interest rates.
Yeah, I mean, we are saving so much money on interest right now, and construction costs are going up so quickly that it makes a lot more sense to be bonding for this money for these projects than to pay for them in cash. And on top of that, we're way behind on our infrastructure, which is crumbling in a lot of parts of the state. I think a lot of people think highways, roads, bridges, transit when they think of infrastructure, but really we're talking about water quality treatments and water treatment plants all over Minnesota in communities that can't afford to pay for them. The range of projects and investments that are covered in a bonding bill is just significant, and we pay for it over 20 years because the investments are long-term.
And oftentimes, these benefit a lot of very rural towns where, for instance, as you brought up, let's say you have a little town of only 800 or 1,000 people. You're not going to have a big enough tax base in a small town to, for instance, build a new water plant. And that's where that bonding bill really comes in, where you can get the state legislature, or at least the entire state, to come in and help pay for that. It's, well, basically how government works in terms of making sure that, well, we all do better. Because you can't have a small town afford to build like a big water plant on their own. They don't have the tax base.
Yep, and that's part of the reason why we were able to get so many rural Republicans to support the bill, because they knew the value of these investments in their communities, and they know they can't do it on their own. So in a lot of ways, we saw yesterday, I think, we had 25 Republicans vote for the bill, and it represents the way politics should be in Minnesota, where we can come together, agree on common problems, and find a solution that can work, even though we don't necessarily share the same views on a lot of issues.
Well, yesterday there certainly was some fireworks in terms of some well, theater that was being done by certain Republican members as they were trying to put in pork with things like masks and having provisions with line three saying that the state could no longer appeal any rulings. There was definitely some circus theater yesterday, but it sounds like you guys were able to get through that.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the Minnesota House is often a very raucous place for debate and amendments and so forth. And so by our standards, it wasn't too bad yesterday. But, yeah, there was definitely a little political theater and a few gotcha votes that they brought forward. But in the end, the Republicans themselves knew the bill was going to pass and were relatively, you know, cooperative throughout the process. So I think there's just a sense that it's time to get this done and move on to the next set of issues at the legislature. And we've got an election coming up, obviously, as you mentioned. So we've got a lot on our plates, and fighting over a bill that helps communities all over Minnesota, I think in the end, just was not a productive thing for them to do.
On the fact that we waited until the month of October, which of course happens to be just 1 month before the election to pass this thing, shows that, well, the composition of the legislature matters, because should we change and have, well, a DFL-controlled House, a DFL-controlled Senate, and of course Governor Walz, we would probably have a much better chance of getting this bill passed in a more timely fashion, well, the next time we have a bonding bill year.
Yeah, and, you know, next bonding bill, of course, but, you know, I think more important is the whole state budget as a whole and all the things that we need to do to respond, not just to the pandemic, but to many of the deep inequities that the pandemic has made worse. So making sure that we have Minnesotans' backs with health care and education and jobs and opportunity, you know, those things are huge decisions that will be made by the next legislature. And we need a majority in the Senate. We need a majority in the House. We need Governor Walz. And with that, we can make some real progress for people.
And we unfortunately are facing a pretty significant budget deficit due to the COVID recession. And I think to the last time we had a recession in Minnesota and we had Republicans in control, we did nothing but cut, cut, cut. We kicked funding of our education down the road to future years, which overall really put a big strain on our budget. And that's something we can't afford to have happen again like we did back in 2009, 2010, and 2011.
Yep, we have some tough, you know, potentially tough decisions to make, but we also have some real opportunities to make long-term investments in the people of the state and to begin to dismantle the kind of structural inequity on racial lines and income lines that has held so many of Minnesotans back. I think we have a real opportunity, and the budget deficit is significant, it's serious, but it isn't ultimately a barrier for us doing the right thing for the people of the state. I think people are really open now to doing things that they wouldn't be open to at other times.
Well, we'll have to see what the legislature looks like next year. We've been speaking with Ryan Winkler, District 46A, Golden Valley, Plymouth, and St. Louis Park, also the House Majority Leader, talking about what's happening at the state legislature with the bonding bill and other legislation. Hey, Ryan, as always, appreciate the time today.
Anytime. Happy to talk.
We'll take a break and come on back for the final segment of FYI Politics up next here on AM 950.
Is your car ready for fall and winter driving? Rudy Luther Toyota is ready to help you keep your car in top shape this fall. Head to RudyLutherToyota.com to schedule your service appointment and take advantage of their no-contact service option. They'll take care of you with routine maintenance, oil and filter changes, battery service, and tire and brake service. And take advantage of the service specials they feature online at RudyLutherToyota.com. Rudy Luther Toyota, conveniently located at 394 and 169, 5 miles west of downtown Minneapolis.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to one, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to one for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much to all the AM 950 listeners who've become members of the radio station. The pandemic has hit our economy hard, and your generous support has helped ensure Progressive Radio stays on the air in Minneapolis-St. Paul. With this upcoming election, it's vitally important to make sure a progressive voice is an option in Minnesota. If you're interested in becoming a member, head over to our webpage, am950radio.com, and click on the membership link. It's really easy to sign up, and you can either make a one-time donation or become a sustaining member with either a monthly or quarterly donation option. And your membership comes with the added bonus of special members-only content. We have brand new interviews with great guests like national host Tom Hartman, politicians and authors. We also revisit classic interviews with new perspectives. These are interviews only available to the members. Once again, go to am950radio.com and sign up to become a member today. Thanks for helping keep the station on the air, and thanks for listening to AM950.
Next time on Philosophy Talk, the philosophy of Hannah Arendt.
One of the most influential political philosophers of the 20th century.
Hannah Arendt experienced totalitarianism firsthand in the years before World War II.
From her experiences, she forged a highly original political and social philosophy.
She dealt with alienation, totalitarianism, anti-Semitism, modernity, and the human condition.
Hannah Arendt, next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM950.
The Minnesota Army National Guard salutes the high school graduating class of 2020. We recognize all of your hard work and the resilience you've demonstrated during this historic time for our country. Those are the traits of a great citizen soldier. You can continue to stand out and be a leader in your community as a soldier in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Learn more about the benefits of part-time service in the Army National Guard at NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. FYI, politics with Brett Johnson. So during this final segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about the business of sports. Patrick and I, of course, are people who follow along what's happening in the sports industry a little closer than maybe the average person. And something that, well, caught my attention this past week was the ratings of the NBA Finals. And here's why. Donald Trump on Twitter said, well, the NBA final ratings were down 48% from last year because people were sick of all the Black Lives Matter and social justice messages. Now, Trump is not wrong. The NBA final ratings were down 48% from last year. But I think there's something missing from this. I don't think it's just because of social justice movements and Black Lives Matter. Because if you look across the entire spectrum of sports, all of their ratings have been down this fall. So like I said, NBA final ratings down 48%. But guess what? Major League Baseball, their playoff ratings are down 39% from last year. The NFL has seen a 14% dip in their ratings. Even the NHL, which of course doesn't have many people of color in that league, they saw a 25% drop in viewership for their playoffs, including, get this, a 61% drop in their ratings for the Stanley Cup Finals. So I think this is something more than just saying its ratings are down because of Black Lives Matter and social justice movements. I think at least when you talk about the NBA, you have the fact that, well, it's being played in the fall with their championship tournament. Normally, that's in June when they don't face a lot of competition. Right now, you have the NBA competing with not only Major League Baseball and the NFL, they're also, of course, competing with a very contentious presidential election. In fact, in this report from Bleacher Report, they brought up that while sports ratings have generally been down, cable news stations like Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN, they're seeing a big spike in their ratings. So I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that, well, not only do you have sports being played at weird times of the year, you also have people who just don't like watching sports without fans. I'm one of those people. I'm not someone who's big on watching sports without a crowd. To me, it's too jarring and just kind of weird to watch. But I think this is also a good point to bring up that, well, you have a lot of people who I think are probably watching those cable TV news networks instead of sports. I know Patrick looked like you were ready to chime in on this too, but I think there's something more to it than just simply saying Black Lives Matter and social justice movements are why sports ratings are down this year.
Yeah, unfortunately, that NBA Finals Game 6 on Sunday night, That went up against the Vikings game, which outrated that finals game. And I think people, if you don't, it's kind of like, I'm trying to figure out a good analogy for this, but people kind of need to understand that there's not really the NFL is about 5 miles ahead of the other three leagues in terms of interest and viewership to begin with. So that's kind of why we have these numbers that they go up against football and they just don't come anywhere close generally.
In fact, yeah, football's in its own universe. Really, no programming can compete with football. Sports or non-sports, scripted TV shows, they can't compete with the NFL. Reality shows, they get outdrawn by the NFL. And when you have the NBA playing their playoffs against, well, other viewership options like, well, the Major League Baseball playoffs, NHL, or as you astutely pointed out, the NFL, well, yeah, that's something different that's going to affect their ratings. And I'm glad you brought that up because I think Trump even said in his tweet that a random football game ended up outdrawing the NBA Finals. Which is true, but keep in mind, the NBA Finals are typically played in June when there's no football whatsoever. All right, a couple more miscellaneous stories to point out before we wrap things up today. This is being reported from NBC News as they have obtained some secret reportings of a militant neo-Nazi group that has been shown to target former and active duty members of the U.S. military, trying to encourage them to join their ranks of these neo-Nazi groups. What's scary is that, well, if they're targeting the U.S. military, they're probably also targeting your police departments. The neo-Nazi movement, of course, is alive and well, especially since Trump has taken office in 2017. So it's disturbing enough that they're already targeting the U.S. military, but don't think for a second they're also not targeting police departments as well. And one more thing to point out, we do have our debate watching party coming up Thursday, October 22nd, a week from today. That, of course, is if the debate happens. Trump absolutely needs to debate. I don't think he can afford to skip the debate. He only has like one more chance to try to change the trajectory of the election, but I could still see them skipping that because if they're going to put in like a mute button or even put up like a plexiglass shield, I think he might bail out and say, you know what, I'd rather go hold a rally in Florida or talk to Rush Limbaugh. But if we do have the debate, and hopefully we do, we will have our watching party at Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. It'll be indoors at the newly remodeled Dunsmore Room. They've got a brand new ventilation system that will be circling through fresh air to make sure everyone stays safe. Masks and social distancing will be required. Order your tickets now, am950radio.com. They're going to go fast with limited capacity. So, again, order your debate watching tickets over at am950radio.com. Matt McNeil is coming up next.